From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The historic global climate strike on Friday mobilized an estimated 4 million protesters in thousands of cities worldwide demanding action on climate change. What had started out as a small number of school kids around the world skipping school on Fridays last year has now ballooned into a massive movement that has inspired a large swath of humanity to take to the streets. Friday's actions kicked off a week-long series of events through September 27th. The actions are timed to coincide with a major United Nations climate conference taking place at the UN headquarters in New York, where state leaders are expected to make strong pledges on climate. My guest is Thanu Yakupitiage, the U.S. Communications Manager at 350.org. 350 is one of the leading organizations that has helped spearhead the climate strike. Welcome to the program, Thanu.
Thanks for having me.
So you are in New York, where, as far as I can tell, the largest action, certainly in North America, took place. We see an estimate of 250,000 people at an event that 5,000 were expected to attend here in Los Angeles, where we're located. I believe organizers, and these are all student organizers, had permitted for 500. They got at least 5,000, possibly more. How big was New York's action? And give us a little report back from it.
Yeah, absolutely. New York's action on Friday was incredible. It was 250,000 plus people on the streets. It initially was expected, there was a permit for 10,000 people. Mm-hmm. It's been incredibly overwhelming to see such an incredibly diverse, multiracial and intergenerational group of people demanding climate justice, demanding more from our elected leaders, demanding more from the leaders who are going to the UN Actions Summit, and also specifically calling for the end to the era of fossil fuels. It was incredibly inspiring. I had the opportunity to be on stage for a few minutes, and just the roar of the crowd was incredible. New York City had actually allowed for all 1.1 million New York City students to go to the climate strikes if they wanted to. It was considered sort of a free day in order to do that, and so we're also really glad that a lot of young people were able to participate, get to learn more about like climate justice, and get to see some really incredible speakers from indigenous leaders to young youth of color who were leading the movement to Greta Thunberg.
Right. Greta Thunberg gave her speech, and on Monday, she also addressed the UN. We'll be playing some clips from her speech later on our show. Around the world, in parts of the world that you wouldn't even expect, there were massive actions as well, right? As far as you can tell, do you have a sense of how global this strike for, with maybe New York as its epicenter, but really a ripple effect in 2,500 cities around the world?
Yeah, absolutely. It's an estimation of about 4 million people across the world. There were incredible marches in places like Dhaka, Bangladesh, in Nairobi, Kenya, in Johannesburg, South Africa, in Fiji and Tonga, and a lot of the Pacific Islands. There was 300,000 people in Melbourne in Australia, massive marches in Manila, in the Philippines. And so it really was incredibly global, and 350.org really supported young people across the world and supported the Fridays for Future International movement in helping to make these marches and rallies incredibly global. And so this was definitely the largest climate mobilization in the history of mobilizations, 4 million people. And I think it really is a turning point for what it is that people are demanding. Young people are spearheading the way. They're saying enough is enough. And they're actually calling for leaders to stop beating around the bush and to stop putting their money into the fossil fuel industry. We know that there are three industries who cause the most amount of emissions, and the fossil fuel industry is one of the top industries. And to see so many young people from places like Kenya and Tuvalu and Thailand and Japan and even smaller cities in the United States really rally together is a real sign of a shift in how it is that we talk about the climate crisis. People recognize that this isn't just about individual action. This is about systemic change.
I want to address the fact that this was so youth-led. Against my better judgment, I went to right-wing websites to see how they were reacting to the climate strike. And I was really shocked to see that they are casting youth participation and youth leadership in this movement as some form of child exploitation by leftists who are making kids anxious about climate change by, you know, educating them about climate change, and that somehow this is some form of child abuse. Greta Thunberg's parents have been accused of child abuse and exploiting their own child. How do you respond to this?
Having worked with these young people, they very much are at the forefront of this movement. They're the ones who are educating themselves, who are, you know, asking their parents to take them to rallies. It was, you know, Greta Thunberg's parents who, you know, were asked by her when she was like, I want to go and strike in front of the Swedish parliament. I think that that's a very convenient narrative for the right. And that's not what's happening. You know, I feel like in the work that we've been doing over the last couple of months to support these youth, I've been just overwhelmed and blown away by how they really understand what the root of the crisis is. They're connecting up the climate crisis to racial injustices, to, you know, economic inequality, to an ecological crisis that's beyond them. And they're not sitting in fear. They're actually mobilizing. And I think that that's what scares the right, that this entire generation of young people, people who are actually not at voting age, are already being politicized and are connecting the dots between different movements and are calling for change. And, you know, like, if that's the narrative that they want to put out, that's the narrative that they want to put out. But I can tell you from working with these young people, it's been really incredible to really learn from them as well. And, you know, on Monday when Greta spoke at the UN, she was just completely unapologetic. She said, how dare you put us in this position? Young people like Jamie Margolin from Seattle and Jesus Villalba from Los Angeles and Jerome Foster from D.C., are calling for elected officials to stand up against the fossil fuel industry and for the United States to really reckon with how they have, you know, invested their money to create this climate crisis. And I think that that's really incredible.
I'm so glad you brought that up. In fact, we had spoken to Jesus Villalba during our climate report on Friday. He's, I believe, 16 or 17. Landon Ramirez, another young person who you could tell clearly were leading this movement. They had organized everything. These they're kids and they are absolutely remarkable. I mean, I just look back at my teenage years and I'm embarrassed at how much more advanced these young folks are and how seriously they take this issue and how impressive they are. So let's talk about what's happening at the UN on Monday. First, let's talk about what's happening inside the UN and then outside. President Donald Trump was expected to skip the climate forum. And I understand he wasn't even really invited because Secretary General Antonio Guterres made it clear that he wanted countries that are serious about taking action on climate to be the ones to present?
Absolutely. And he showed up and it's stunning. But, you know, I think that there's a lot of young people who are also in the UN. There's a lot of people who are going to be pushing back. And to be frank, Donald Trump has no place in the UN Climate Action Summit, considering that he continues to consistently roll back climate policy. Just last week on California emissions policy, he was rolling that back. The week before, it was on water.
Even in energy efficient light bulbs.
Absolutely. It's completely absurd that he's there. Donald Trump has the interests of billionaires at heart. He has the interests of the fossil fuel industry. You know, they're the ones who are lining his pockets. And, you know, the work that we're doing to ensure a future for young people and a sustainable future where we are transitioning to 100% renewables, where we have a Green New Deal that works for all, is beyond this particular president, and we'll be continuing to do that work.
So what is exactly expected to happen at the UN on Monday and the rest of the week? This is not one of the COP conferences, the climate conference on parties. I understand that what's expected from leaders, whether they deliver or not is another question, but what's expected is stronger commitments than were made at the Paris Accord?
Yeah, so the UN Climate Action Summit is a gathering of world leaders to review the Paris Climate Agreement, to review the IPCC report that came out almost a year ago now, in order to make new ambitions on climate to alleviate the climate crisis. So on Saturday, ahead of the Monday plenaries, there was also a youth summit that happened in sort of conjunction to the Climate Action Summit. World leaders have spoken, some young people, including Greta Thunberg, spoke, and actually 16 young people, including Greta Thunberg and youth from across the world, actually have filed a human rights complaint, human rights violation, with the UN around young people's futures being stolen by the fact that world leaders aren't doing enough on the climate crisis.
And right, so this is sort of an international legal action, and there's sort of a parallel action wending its way through the courts at the U.S. level for years now. The Our Children's Trust climate lawsuit that is saying that it's unconstitutional for children's future to be stolen from them, which is also kind of working its way through the Supreme Court and actually heading to the Supreme Court, right?
Yes, absolutely. And so you're going to, on Monday, you're going to hear speeches from world leaders to really think about sort of what are the obligations of leaders around the climate crisis. And we're really using this as a moment to really pinpoint who it is that's responsible for the climate crisis and where it is that world leaders need to step up their ambitions. On Monday, there actually is also going to be multiple actions happening outside of the UNSG. So, for example, on Monday, there'll be an action at the Oil and Gas Summit, which ironically is happening at the same time as the UN Climate Action Summit, where Exxon, Shell, BP, and other oil and gas companies are actually meeting in an attempt to greenwash. And there will be actions outside of that summit as well to call on for accountability for the fossil fuel industry.
And tell me about the banner unfurl that 350.org was involved in outside that oil and gas summit, which is quite remarkable that they had the audacity to not move it to another city or another date. So what did that banner say?
The banner was a 100-foot banner that said Exxon knew, make them pay. Mm-hmm. And it's a call to hold Exxon and other fossil fuel companies accountable for the fact that as early as the 1980s, they knew that burning oil and gas would cause a rise in emissions and would cause the planet to warm. And even though they had this information, their scientists knew this information, they chose to ignore it and to hide it from the public and to continue to perpetuate oil and gas and to continue to drill. And so when we talk about the scale of the climate crisis and the work that needs to happen in order to transition us to 100% renewables, and elected officials say, oh, well, it's too expensive, our response is, well, then make them pay, because these industries are the ones who have perpetuated the crisis. And we are at an incredible tipping point now. And we actually can get to 100% renewables. We need to just reshift the billions of dollars, the trillions of dollars that exist, into the right place.
And in fact, what role are these companies, these fossil fuel companies that are, you know, whose very existence is at odds with humanity's future, what role are they playing in the UN climate conference? They, you would imagine, should be the target of the conference, but I understand that they and other corporations have been brought into the conversation.
Well, I mean, this is why young people are calling for these leaders and for, you know, these summits to, you know, take the fossil fuel industry out of that. You cannot possibly create accords and create like international laws on how we're going to deal with the climate crisis with the polluters at the table. And that's been one of the major issues, including with the Paris Climate Accord, right, where you have the polluters at the table. We're saying you need to remove the polluters off the table. You need to hold them accountable. There needs to be litigation against those polluters. And we need for our leaders to stop taking money from the fossil fuel industry. You cannot actually push forward climate action by being in bed with the exact same people who are perpetuating the crisis.
So what is expected to happen between now and September 27? The global climate strike, you know, it was kicked off on Friday, September 20th. It's expected to go through the 27th, encompassing the UN Climate Conference. Aside from the Exxon banner, the banner targeting Exxon, are there other actions happening Monday and through the rest of the week?
Yeah, absolutely. So 350.org actually is supporting escalated actions around the country because we're trying to show that, you know, our call for climate action is beyond just one strike. These strikes are happening every Friday, and it's beyond this moment that was just held on Friday. And actually, in D.C., there's a major shutdown of D.C. in a attempt to, you know, shift business as usual and really hold the fossil fuel industry accountable. On Tuesday in Seattle, there's going to be a walk with indigenous leaders to protect and restore the Salish Sea and call for a climate emergency. On Wednesday in the Bay Area, there are disruptions and climate actions happening across downtown San Francisco. And in Vermont, there's also going to be an action against fossil fuel lobbyists. On Thursday in Denver, Colorado, there's an action against a fossil fuel infrastructure called Suncor, where you'll have activists really targeting fossil fuel infrastructure there. And in Boston, Massachusetts, there's going to be, you know, climate actions as well. And then on Friday in Portland, there's an action against Zenith Energy, which is basically they're trying to ensure that fossil fuel companies are being held accountable there. And on Saturday in Bow, New Hampshire, there's going to be a shutdown. Activists are going to try to shut down the last remaining coal plant in New Hampshire. And there's also in Minnesota, there's going to be a gathering of indigenous leaders on the route of the Line 3 pipeline. So across the country, we are really mobilizing and showing what this international and national pressure looks like on the local level, and on the local level, why it is that people are demanding for more in their local communities, where they're facing a crisis of polluted water, the crisis of unbreathable air, and a crisis of fossil fuel infrastructure being built across their lands.
And on Monday, the same day as the UN Climate Conference, Oxfam International released a really important report showing how the world's poorest people, who are most impacted by the climate crisis, who contributed the least to that crisis, are getting the least resources to fight the climate crisis. So they're disproportionately paying more out of their pockets, and their governments are paying more. And this is really, you know, such a clearly class, the impact of climate change has such a clear class bias and a clear class angle to it that is not being discussed, except when you hear people talk now about things like the Green New Deal that's linking economic justice to climate justice, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, the reality is that those who have had the least to do with the problem for perpetuating the climate crisis are, you know, having to deal with it the most. And so you have countries in the global south that are feeling the impacts far worse than countries in the global north who have perpetuated the crisis. So, for example, if you look at the Bahamas, you know, as an example of a global south country, they were completely devastated by Hurricane Dorian. And, you know, even people who were trying to flee Dorian and come to the U.S. were denied entry into the United States. These are low income people from Bahamas who are facing the impacts. And so
they're people of color. They're African descended
exactly.
people.
They're black and brown people who are having to rebuild their homes. Bahamas is going to have to put in billions of dollars into recovery. And, you know, they've had the least to do with the climate crisis. And so you see this trend over and over again when it comes to the Pacific Islands, when it comes to parts of Asia, when it comes to Africa, for example, with the severe droughts and crop shortages that are actually leading to people migrating to Europe. And yet what we see on the global north end is, you know, immigrants being shut out, migrants being stopped from entering places in the global north. And so we really see how the climate crisis perpetuates a crisis of migration. It perpetuates a crisis of a food shortage. It perpetuates multiple crises, and it's countries in the global south who are having to pay for it, and it shouldn't be that way.
Well, Thanu, give out a website where people can find out more about your work, about the actions that are happening through the rest of this week. I am assuming you gave the highlights. There might even be smaller actions happening in other cities between now and September 27th, right?
Yeah. Another highlight on September 27th, of course, there's also going to be strikes again. You can find out more information at 350.org and at globalclimatestrike.net.
Well, I want to thank you so much for all the work you're doing. Really appreciate it. Thanks, Thanu.
Thank you so much.
My guest has been Thanu Yakupitiage, the U.S. Communications Manager at 350.org. We've been discussing the global climate strike and all of the related actions around climate justice. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. And you can also find our report from Los Angeles' global climate strike as part of our series, Rising Up in the Streets. Subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo and find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.